Pumi Mashiko is here, and we're also joined this morning by two people who I love to hear from, David Ansara and Gabriel Krauser. It's an important and historic week in South Africa. I know that line has been trotted out a lot, but really, you're seeing people who have been insulting and cajoling and rubbishing each other for 30 years having to come together and make things happen. There are still people who are going to be cajoling and rubbishing this week, and don't worry, there are plenty of them in the media too. So if you've, am I right? I mean, you've heard
week
them.
Week after week of unprecedented historical weeks.
Well, I think yesterday, the presidential inauguration, first time in 10 years, they've actually done that at the Union Buildings. I don't actually remember this because it was such a non-event, but the last time Cyril Ramaphosa was sworn in as president, beginning of his first term, it was at Loftus. It wasn't even at the Union Buildings. So this was quite a, it feels almost like a kind of return to something a little more stately than a stadium, you know.
And quite a lot of pomp and ceremony yesterday.
There was some international visitors, and there were some jets flying over. So I live right under the
Philharmonic Orchestra.
I know. I live under the flight path of all of that stuff. So I saw them practicing on Tuesday already and making a hell of a noise. Helicopters, the jets, the other planes in our Air Force. It's actually quite impressive. But then it has been before, and I remember I felt very proud and very left out when Thabo Mbeki was inaugurated back in 1999.
Why left out?
Well, because everyone I knew was invited except me, and I wasn't invited this time either. But you know, I'm well over that. And plus, what I want to spend time with those people for, we're going to be seeing a lot of them in the next couple of years. And there'll be a lot of changes. There's going to be a very bumpy road ahead of us, regardless of how the politicians think it's going to go right now. So, Pums.
Did you see Mswati and one of the wives? And I wondered to myself, as he was sitting there watching an inauguration, if he was wondering what this would be like if it happened in his own country.
Well, it depends on how much money you can get out of everyone else.
I wondered if he was like feeling a little jealous, like, we could have this too, a democracy.
I don't think it does happen in his country.
No, it doesn't. That's why I was wondering if he was one, if he kind of thought, we could have this too, a democracy in our country.
So we've only got one camera on Pumi at the moment. So Jack, if you can just show us who else is in the studio.
Which one is
the next camera? There he is. There's David. David Ansara. There we go. All right. So, guys, and nice to see you, David. And listen, congratulations on all the stuff that you guys are doing at the Free Market Foundation. It's really, really cool. I've been watching a lot of your content that's been coming out ahead of the election, during the period of the election, some voices of reason, and now after. So let's start with you. You're our guest this morning, our first guest. Our other guest, Gabriel, will be joining us on the line. But what are your overall impressions a few days down the line with the GNU, the Government of National Unity?
The GNU Dawn.
Well, look, this isn't the first GNU that South Africa has had. Karl Marx said that history repeats itself, first as tragedy and second as farce. So hopefully this GNU is a bit more successful than the first one. And I think, look, it's easy to prematurely speculate about how things are going to go. But, you know, I think given the fact that there were 2 weeks to really negotiate the agreement, I mean, I think we just mustn't get too ahead of ourselves. I mean, really, they agreed to agree, basically. It's sort of talks about talks, you know.
And has anyone really seen this document?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think
Gideon Balloon. Because he signed it without knowing what was in it.
He may have seen it. I don't know if he read it.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting about that is the need for sufficient consensus. So the 60% rule of the seats in parliament, which effectively means that if the ANC agree and the DA agree, then everybody else can get stuffed. I think that's going to be interesting in terms of the role of the smaller parties as well. Like, do they feel like they have a meaningful voice within this GNU? Will it just be the DA and the ANC sort of to
but the
exclusion
the GNU
of
does
else?
Not trump the rules of Parliament, you know, so Parliament still has its own specific rules that everybody has to abide by. So just in terms of the role of the smaller parties and what, and I think the one thing that every time I listen to all of the various people talking about this thing that I'm wondering about is how much of an opposition the DA is going to be now.
Well,
Gareth, and we sat with John Steenhuisen and asked him about, is he negotiating in bad faith with his moonshot pact if they are willing to have a conversation with the ANC? And he was like, and here we are.
I must correct you. Like, technically, they're not the opposition anymore. Technically, the opposition is MK, the EFF, and the smaller parties. Those are the opposition parties.
What are they calling themselves? Progressive Caucus.
No, listen, did you watch that? Now, let's just talk about that for a second, because I'm still reeling from the shock that I was forced to endure no less than 2 hours. And I did try for the sake of this show. Let me tell you, the suffering that I go through is absolutely real for this audience. I want them to be grateful. I want you, if you're listening to the show, you just remember to say thank you when we have to suffer through 2 hours of mumbling and nonsense from the likes of Dalim Pofu and MK's leadership. First of all, they arrive late, so you know your Sunday afternoon is just going to be spectacularly shit. And then when they start, and it just seems that MK cannot get to any meetings on time. The IFP were complaining about this during the negotiation straight after the election, that they waited and waited and waited. Well, then the whole country had to wait because now we were going to hear from Ubaba. So we must just sit like good children and wait for him to condescend to address us. And then when the press conference starts, it's nonstop political rhetoric for at least an hour. Then Dalim Pofu talking absolute nonsense about cases that they've brought that they have won and that they haven't won, that is completely unimportant to those who've joined for the purposes of hearing what MK's plan is. And when Ubaba eventually speaks, he like laughs for a couple of minutes. He laughs and then he talks like he's in the trenches during the 1980s against the old regime. It felt like an anachronism to me. Am I wrong? Did I mischaracterize any of
that? I was too sick to watch, thank goodness. But I did catch up with all of the pieces that everybody edited, right? So, and I suppose these are all the salient pieces that I got to see.
Lucky and the, you.
The thing that stood out for me is Colleen. Hello,
yes.
Girl.
Yes.
Hello, girl. Wow. With your 4,000 votes.
Turnaround. I mean, suddenly, Colleen Makubele pops her head out from behind the parapet wall, and she's a totally different person to the one we spoke to last time we had her in.
Hi, Bo.
So is she with MK now?
She is. We saw it, right? So when we saw, I think when we saw the press conference, when the initially all the small parties were complaining about rigging and vote counting and irregularities at when they were at the Rock, and she was standing next to Jacob Zuma and looking quite, you know, I just thought to myself, ooh, I see this girl. I see a focused girl, and where she is going to next, because that has been Colleen. I mean, this has been her political career, whether it's coming out of COPE and with all of the issues that she had in Johannesburg and then restyling herself as part of, as the leader of SARA, which was actually an amalgamation of small parties in Joburg as well. And now popping up inside the MK, she's very focused about her career. I don't know if she's just as focused about the constituency that she is supposedly going to be representing.
Yeah, I think on the campaign trail, John Steenhuisen referred to some of these small parties as popcorn parties. They sort of pop up and then go away. But yeah, I think she probably saw which way the political winds were going and has an eye on her kind of longer term career.
It is very careerist of Colleen. But watching MK, and I want us to talk a little bit about something that has been I saw it a little bit on the news, but it hasn't been spoken about enough, I don't think, is the break-in at the IEC warehouse. And unknown and unnamed, as yet unknown and unnamed gunmen, insisting on having access to the ballots that are now at the warehouse, at the IEC warehouse. 15 armed gunmen arrived. And that is part of this whole chaos, I think, that surrounds the MK and where they are and what they're saying and not saying. And
so are you linking them to that break-in?
The only people that have anything to gain from having access to the ballot papers after they have been counted and the whole thing has been signed for, they're the only people that are still making a noise about the rigging of an election and 9 million stolen votes. So who else? Who else would want to? It may not be sanctioned from inside the MK, but these are definitely MK people.
So it's a funny thing. MK are now the official opposition, right? From a position where they weren't even in the last election. MK have done extremely well. They got 40-odd% of the vote in KZN, which is tremendous for a party that's just popped up a few months ago. And we've got Gabriel on the line. We'll bring him on in a second. But these guys just don't know how to win. I mentioned this
they
on my
show. They don't know how to win.
You know, some people are so trapped in the victim narrative because it gives you certain powers and privileges. And let's look at the history of, you know, world politics and society in the last 20 years. Being a victim is a fantastic place to be. You can moan and bitch and get sympathy, and you can draw on historical narratives to work yourself into pretty much any situation. And you always come up trumps, because if you are the one who's been beaten down, who is the victim, then everybody has to be on your side or else they're horrible people. And this is obviously hugely in conflict with winning, which is what MK should be doing. They should be celebrating the fact that they got 14% out of the starting blocks, which is unbelievable. The EFF wishes they had those kind of numbers. When the DA was still the DP, they wish they had those kind of numbers. Cope wished when they'd started, they had those kind of numbers. And yet these guys just are not capable of winning. They're not capable of taking the win, knowing what a victory feels like, and building on that. Instead, they must go straight back into victim mode and bitch and moan consistently. And they'll be doing this for every step of the way going forward. I don't think, and Jacob Zuma is, to my mind, strong as his muti might be, not looking at
yo.
Can I tell you something? If you take a look at him, he's not. He's an 82-year-old man. He, of course, is not going to be in great health going into his eighth decade. If he drops dead tomorrow, MK ceases to exist as a viable entity. There are too many squabbling nobodies underneath him in that party who mean absolutely nothing to the electorate. They voted for Jacob Zuma. They didn't vote for MK. They don't know what MK stands for. They voted for a man and the force of personality he's come to represent in this country. If he falls, the whole of MK falls. And that's unbelievable for an opposition. Paper thin.
It'll be fascinating to watch, because yesterday, so today is Thursday, on Tuesday, and uncharacteristic, I think on Tuesday in the South Coast, there were a whole lot of by-elections and there were a whole lot of MK contestants in those by-elections. I haven't seen those results just yet. I'm a little bit slow on the uptake, but I haven't seen the results. But it'll be interesting to see, because now we're in the next cycle. Right. So we're in the next cycle going into the local government elections in 2 years' time. So this is what everybody is supposed to be gearing up for. And it's also going to be the test of what the GNU actually means or looks like, what that agreement between the ANC and the DA looks like and what repercussions it has for them going into the local government elections. So we're in for a bumpy ride. However you look at it, we're in for a bumpy ride. The next 2 years is going to be critical for a lot of these smaller guys, Rise, Busa, MK. And then also to see what this getting into bed with each other does for the DA's traditional base and for the ANC's traditional base going into the local government elections. And then is Cyril Ramaphosa going to be any better in these 5 years? Right? Like the second term of any president really is a non-thing. You know, it's a time to consolidate whatever gains you've made, whatever wins. And what we know is that Cyril Ramaphosa was a hell of a disappointment in his first 5 years. I see the Rand is bouncing back. Right. So we're seeing a little bit, you spoke, David, a little bit earlier about history repeating itself. I think the Ramaphoria is back because the Rand is strengthened to 17 odd. I don't know if that's going to be like, I mean, when he came on, when he first won, the Rand was 12 Rand to the dollar. And here we sit all excited about it coming down from 18 to 17. I don't know if that's going to last.
I'm keen to bring Gabriel on, but David, how about that? I mean, people have been saying the markets. It seems that the people are convinced that the markets are some nefarious force that acts and operates in order to bring.
Well, the markets are people, right? Behind every portfolio allocation or investment decision is a person who's evaluating risk, and markets are very sentiment driven. I think they're an interesting barometer of sentiment, but I don't think we should get too fixated on what the JSE might be doing or what the Rand is doing. I think probably a lot of investors have priced in, it's just the fact that it's not an EFF or MK, a coalition government with the ANC. That's probably providing some kind of positive sentiment. But the real question should be, what is the policy framework going to look like under the new government? And that's where I think there's going to be huge internal contradictions within the GNU. And, you know, if you consider the different ideological traditions of the DA and the ANC, and there are a number of problems in South Africa which are directly policy related, right? Just before the elections, the president signed the National Health Insurance Act into law. And that's a hugely damaging piece of legislation. And it's a binary thing, right? Like you either have NHI or you don't. And, the business lobby groups and the healthcare funders have been saying, well, we just want Section 33 of the Act removed, which prohibits the private providers from, kind of offering the full range of healthcare financing options. But there are a number of really damaging aspects to NHI, like this establishment of this huge fund, that there's all this ministerial discretion. And so how do you resolve something like that, right, within the cabinet? You need to remove that piece of legislation. But what I can see happening is sort of a triangulation happening, like a compromise position being met. And maybe you say, okay, well, look, we're just not going to provide the funding for NHI just yet. And then that enables the ANC to save face. Because if the ANC withdraws NHI, then you're going to have EFF and MK on their back saying, oh, look, you don't care about poor black people. You just want to see them die. But the real aspects that we need, the real interventions we need are low-cost benefit options for the emerging middle class and the working class people in South Africa, lower income people, to be able to get access to private healthcare, and not some giant state-administered fund, right? So I think that's going to be just one of dozens of policy areas. I mean, we need to scrap the mining charter. I mean, the courts have ruled that the mining charter is not enforceable, a set of regulations. So just it needs to be scrapped. We need to give mineral rights back into the hands of the miners that create the wealth and prosperity in this country that really built the industrial capacity of South Africa. We're now way down on all of the kind of mining indexes. And the list is very, very long, right? So I think the DA is going to need to be very smart about the concessions that it extracts within this government. And obviously there's a balance of power. It can't do everything. But if it's going to justify its participation in the GNU to its constituencies, it's going to need to show some really tangible policy reforms, and like the big ones. It's not just some kind of cosmetic things on the margins.
Right. Let's bring Gabriel Krause on. He's been waiting patiently in the wings, and it's good to have him back. Gabriel, how are you?
Good, good. Sorry, I was waylaid by my own foolishness, but it's very nice to be here with you guys. Right.
We kept you waiting as well, so we're both at fault here. So, all right, I asked David, asked him particularly in the last question about the markets, but let's take your out of the starting blocks look at what's happening here. Government of National Unity, President inaugurated yesterday, ANC and DA in this unholy alliance, opposition parties made up of even more unholy alliances, the Progressive Caucus. Read the scene for us and tell us what your trained eye picks up.
Well, it's the new dawn, never seen before, and yet somehow the sense of deja vu. I think that David makes the right point that what one would like to see is the strategic use of the newly acquired influence and power on behalf of South Africa's most liberal party, the DA, and on the part of Vilenkosini Hlabisa and the IFP, who I will just say, I went to the IFP's policy conference, the first one that they've had in 15 years, I think it was, over December. And Hlabisa, I think, is an extraordinarily positive figure. And I think one would like to see Steenhuisen and Hlabisa use the influence that they have and the power that they have to extract concessions that will free up South Africa and sort of roll back some of the counterproductive government interventions that have typified Ramaphosa's administration more than any other in the new South Africa. However, I think that one question is how long is it going to last? My own feeling is that it's like 1 to 3 winters. I think winters are a good way to count out South African time. I see the already existing squabbles between Fikile Mbalula and Helen Zille about what 60% means. Like, the GNU can't agree what 60% means. That's definitely not a good start. And Mbalula's position is basically 60% means whatever we want, we get. The contract is nothing. And so if the DA concedes on that, then that contract is a joke from the get-go. I think that MK and the EFF are seem to some observers that I've encountered in the professional space to, you know, people say, like, you know, they've played themselves out of the court, they've rendered themselves irrelevant. I remember speaking to the most senior person in a city administration in Johannesburg when the EFF voted in Mpopalatse as the mayor in 2021, spoke to that morning, and the end of Palazzi's administration was predicted at that time to within a month. This person I was speaking to just counted out the budget cycles and gave a very simple kind of warning. She said the EFF has had the power to put it in. They've got the power to take it out. And what they're going to do is they're going to give a lot of runway to this new administration, but they're going to put a lot of sticky glue on the tar. So it's very hard for the plane to take off, and it's going to keep going. But eventually, when it does take off, and it will take off, but the moment that it does, the EFF is going to shoot it down. This plane will never fly. And I mean, that is exactly what happened. I think most Joburgers sort of know this feeling of disappointment. Like, sure, you know, the DA was in, Mashaba, things kind of, it was up and down, and then out again, and then back in, and nothing improved. And it leaves a bitter taste in the mouth. It sort of tarnishes the reputation of the DA and as of democratic change as a route to better service delivery outcomes. And I think that the EFF and the sort of middle management level of the ANC can at any stage get together to collapse the GNU and replace it with something more to their liking. There's multiple routes to do that, and there's multiple kinds of triggers. But, you know, winter, a sort of violent riot session, some guy in the DA tweeting, "Rise, the heroes of Phoenix." And it's like, okay, well, look, these terrible racists, you can't work with them. Collapse the government, welcome in the EFF. And in the meanwhile, you know, the biggest pressure to form the GNU was market pressure. It's exactly the right place that you started there with David. that market pressure, the way that the ANC has dealt with its terrible fear of collapsing the market and collapsing the liberation movement and having it go sort of the same way as Zimbabwe and whatever into this embarrassing quagmire. The ANC has been very worried about blowing up the JSE and blowing up the RAND. That has never to date caused the ANC to deviate from the National Democratic Revolution as a direction. It's only caused them to strategically sort of slow down and drip feed and manage the pace at which it occurs so that you've got a bit of a good news cycle, a bit of a bad news cycle, a bit of a bad news cycle. Ah, then another good news cycle. One step forward, two steps backwards. It's a sort of strange way of running a country, but it does get you going backwards, which is the direction of the NDR. And I think that that's the kind of sort of picture that I am worried about playing out here, that you've got a good news story right now. We're all very euphoric. But in 1 to 3 winters, it's rolled back. And at that time, the EFF will say, look, we've been co-running Joburg for a time. Malema said, we're not going to disrupt in Parliament anymore. He's had his tummy tuck. He's not fat Malema anymore. He's skinny Malema. He's disciplined Malema. The lockdown came. He was the first one to call the police. The elections came. He was the first one to say these were free and fair. We must respect the results, even though we've gone down. You know, he's becoming less of the revolutionary outsider and more of the statesmanly, authoritative, serious political insider. All of that is designed to calm markets by the time that he and Floyd and whatever walk into cabinet with rhetoric that they'll say, look, we've actually proven our track record. We're not as crazy and scary as you make us out to be. And the scariest thing is that they'll be right, because the worst aspect of government is not the particular individual in charge. It's the policies. It is the decisions about NHI, about public procurement, about employment equity, et cetera, that put the country either in an opportunity space or in a destruction space.
Right. You know, you say that about a kind of disciplined skinny Malema. One of the things that, and this is the thing about South African politics, right? Is there's so many things happening at one time. If you only watch one part of it, you miss out on so much more. Because yesterday with Malema in the dock, listening to him speak and how he was responding to the questions that were being put at him. Yesterday, Malema, 6 years this case has been going on with Malema and the shooting of live rounds at a rally in Umtata. 6 years this thing has been going on. And now it's really come down to a crunch, you know. So yesterday they had the ballistics expert, they had Malema in the dark, they had all of the stuff and what it could mean, because things were not looking good for Mr. Malema yesterday. And going into an elective conference in December, Julius Malema will obviously be standing for yet another term as the, and I wonder if the next person that becomes the head of the EFF will also be called the CIC, right? He is going into this elective conference in December, the third time that he will be standing as the head of the EFF, a declined EFF going into that. And some, I think, a little bit of discontent among the ranks. So it'll also be interesting to see what the next 6 months look like for the EFF and what a changing of the guard, if ever there will be a changing of the guard. And because that will also have an impact on how the rest of the country sees the EFF and its chances going forward. Is the EFF another, you know, UDM? Is it just going to be Julius Malema for the next 20 years and we're all going to be listening to him and what he wants and moving and flip-flopping with his whims for the next 20 years? So I mean, we're in, telling you guys, if anything that I see, the next 5 years is going to be chaos in the South African political landscape. I don't know if the DA is going to be able to use those levers that they now have to push whatever reforms they want to push. I don't know if the GNU is going to hold as long as it is, because every time I hear Fikile Mbalula talk on the one side and then hear Helen Zille talk on the other side, I'm going, these guys, oh my God, these guys are both of them willing this thing to fall apart at any moment. It'll be interesting to see what cabinet Cyril Ramaphosa puts announces in the next couple of days as well, and who is in that cabinet. All of these things are so unreadable right now.
Yeah, so I think the composition of the cabinet obviously will be interesting. And you can see, you mentioned KZN, and they have a GPU, Government of Provincial Unity, and the DA
and
got
the DA
finance
got the government
and public works, right? So those are pretty significant portfolios. So if that's replicated at the national level, I think that could be an interesting opportunity for the DA. But yeah, I'm cautiously pessimistic about the future prospects of the GNU. I would be the first to cheer if we see a raft of reforms coming through that unlock growth and private enterprise and liberalize the labor market and withdraw BEE and secure private property rights. But I don't really see that happening. And there is an alternative to the GNU, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It was something that we at the Free Market Foundation were advocating before the elections, which is what we term the no-elition option, which is a confidence and supply agreement that the DA could still play a significant role if the GNU collapses under the weight of its own contradictions. It could still play a significant role within Parliament with its 21% under a confidence and supply arrangement with the ANC. So if the GNU collapses, there is still another 5 years to go under the current administration, and political power can be wielded in different ways, right? So that would mean an ANC minority government, and the ANC would have to propose legislation in the House and motivate for that to be passed. They wouldn't be able to just ram legislation through like they did in the past. So that could introduce a lot more bargaining, a lot more, and actually have a stronger balance of power.
Actually do the work of politics, you mean? You mean you actually expect people to, which if they were willing to do the hard work, they would not need a GNU, because actually what they need to be doing, all of them, the ANC, the DA, the IFP, EFF, all of them need to do the work of legislating. They need to do the work of walking across the aisle and convincing people across the aisle to come to their side for whatever piece of legislation they're putting on the table. But none of them are willing to do that. I mean, I for one, and I've said this on the show before, would love to see Phemi Majotina do a little bit of work in terms of whipping up those votes. Imagine if she actually did that work. Imagine if we had parliamentary debates that were actually about policy and that were actually about convincing each person to vote for the betterment of the country and not just in line with the policy line. We're not going to see that.
So much of this stuff is outside of ordinary people like ours, out of our hands, right? You can take two attitudes here, and I really do think it's as stark as this. Either you are, and I like the term cautiously pessimistic, that but I mean, for better or worse, I'm an optimist, right? In the depths of the worst economy that we've had in my lifetime, and the depths of laws being passed which are completely counter to the good of the people, all of that stuff, I still maintain my positive attitude. And I'm afraid I have to go into this with as much optimism, otherwise I'm just an inconsistent liar. So I'm going into this with the hope that these people can be adult. And it's happened. I mean, in countries all over the world, coalition governments are the way that laws are passed. And it is the standard form for mature democracies, where you have more than two parties, that they have to get together and they have to hammer out things, and that requires negotiation. And what it requires from everybody is a little bit of giving up what you want so that you can get something from someone else. You know, that's the kind of thing that makes marriages work. And I'm optimistic. And I think to take up the contrary position at this point is premature. And it's exactly like those people who gave up and left South Africa in the 90s. It's exactly like those people who decided they don't want anything to do with anything the ANC does, and we're not going to work with them at all. You know, there were those parties back in 1994 that have all disappeared along the wayside. I think that you've got to jump in with this, because symbolically it's hugely important. You've got the two biggest parties, of course, neither of them that big, but the two biggest parties that have decided they're going to put aside years of squabbling and stupidity and try to make things better for the people of South Africa. Now, symbolically, that's massively important for all of us. And if we see a government where we have a little representation of parties like the IFP, parties like the DA, parties like the ANC, and perhaps even parties like the PA, who knows, I think it matters to people in this country because we are a diverse, we're a diverse and complicated place. And if people see that in their government, they will be likelier to support that government. Now, if the politicians can put their egos aside and they can stick to the plan, we could have something truly remarkable happen here. That's the upside. You know, when you go into a business deal, you look at the upside and you go, this looks like it could turn into something really successful. You don't go, oh, no, no, I see this as a total disaster. It's going to fuck up right from the start. I'm not interested. I'm out. Because then you don't gain anything on the upside. So that's where I'm at the moment. I'm a shareholder who's happy to keep my shares. And I feel like this is a better management team in the business to take things forward, however it's constituted, than the previous management team.
Can I push back a little bit? Because I think that I think you've made a very good case. I think that's the right way to think about this moment in South African history. We had a generally free and fair election. We have a diverse, pluralistic parliament that is cobbling together the kind of government, the kind of cabinet that is going to make South Africans feel like, sure, I look at that, I look at us. It's kind of a bit of a mirror image. We have our own internal contradictions. That thing has its own internal contradictions, but we can win and we have won and we can do great things. And that cabinet can do great things too. This is a moment to be celebrated. And there is, you know, good reason to invest in the goodwill that's being built here. The part of the problem, part of the concern is the cost of entry for the DA, for that investment. And it was on this show that I spoke quite a while ago at length about the moment that made me think, like a year and a half ago, the moment that made me think the DA is probably going to go for a deal like this, even though their kind of public relations team were saying, no, we want to do the no-elition confidence and supply type thing that David was talking about. We don't want to go into cabinet with the ANC. And I was like, okay, maybe they'll keep that promise, but maybe they will go into cabinet with the ANC. And here's why I'm worried about that. The DA's legal team ran interference on behalf of Cyril Ramaphosa in court in a Palapala-related question where the president had said, look, if I ever do this, then you will know that I've got a conflict of interest and I'm acting unlawfully. And then he went and did it very precisely to do with when and how he suspended Busisiwe Mkhwebane, who herself was a ridiculous character. But the moment she got real evidence of a real scandal, he suspended her after having said he will never suspend her while there's a trial pending between them on the lawfulness of her position. And it was the day before the result of that trial came out, he suspended her. He could have waited a day, but he didn't because he was so itchy to get rid of someone who was seriously and vociferously against him in a position capable of wielding state power to investigate him. And the DA then went to court and said, no, Ramaphosa is innocent. And advocate Bud Lender kind of just made representations to the court that were not true to the facts, shall we say politely, in regards to this issue. And Dali Mpofu, advocate Mpofu, who was arguing against Ramaphosa, spoke so much. I mean, he used so many words over so many hours that even though he did say a good thing or two, it was lost between all the rest. And so Ramaphosa got off scot-free. And insofar as that's part of the cost of entry into this coalition, is that you take the Palapala scandal and you help cover it up. There is something worrying about what that bodes for the go forward.
Gabriel, I've got to say, like, for the DA to carry on with this bitching from the sidelines opposition tactic is not going to grow and hasn't grown their share of the vote either. If I have to see them doing what Thabo Mbeki said Tony Leon was the chihuahua, remember? And since... Since then, it was a problem with Helen Ziller. It was a problem with Musi Maimane. It was a problem for John Steenhuisen. They can't keep coming out in the third act doing the first and the second act. This is a chance for them to show what they've been saying for the longest time is that we need a competent state. You know, we need a capable state. We need people in government who can do things. So if they get two or three cabinet portfolios and those portfolios perform unbelievably well, let's just imagine best case scenario. Then the DA, they've proven a point and they can actually grow their share of the vote. Because there's a practical example of how they can make national government work. If not, they go back to doing exactly the same thing they've done before. No growth, no going backwards, just staying the same. And that would drive drive me to boredom and death.
Even if they are kicked out, they could still grow. By the way, just on that point, like in Johannesburg, like their vote share has grown between 2021 and 2024, even though they had this thing where they went in, they were kicked out, and the ANC shrunk. So I'm not saying that if they do a bad, it could still work out well, even if they only have a term, even if they don't necessarily run the ministerial position any better than anyone else. There is so much reason to be critical of the ANC that their vote share seems to be falling regardless.
Yeah, I'd be more worried if I were in the ANC than if I were in the DA right now. Yeah,
I think if the ANC has been the biggest loser in these elections, the biggest winner by far where we sit today has been President Cyril Ramaphosa. Imagine, David is here from the Free Market Foundation. Imagine a company lost 20% of its market share. Would that CEO still have a job? And yet, here we are, sitting with Ramaphosa again. The DA, as Gabriel says, have run interference for Cyril Ramaphosa in so many ways. And yet again, this is what they've done for Cyril Ramaphosa. They have saved him. Really have saved him from actually taking the fall, because I think the ANC was in a place where they were going to try and get rid of him, but the DA have saved him. I think the biggest winner is Cyril Ramaphosa. If anything, guys, Cyril Ramaphosa is a problem, and you should watch him closely, that guy, because the way he moves, he's a problem.
And this situation really suits his leadership style. He's a consensus seeker. He likes that kind of big tent politics, right?
He shows himself as a consensus seeker, but actually he's very dictatorial, Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa. He shows himself to be a consensus seeker, but actually he is not. He actually Cyril Ramaphosa currently sits with the highest number of non-elected officials overseeing and supervising almost every single government ministry. Cyril Ramaphosa has taken into the office of the president this SIU. They now report into the office of the president. So how much does Cyril Ramaphosa direct who and when they put out their reports? So when he was in conflict with the speaker, surprise, surprise, here is a case against Nosivuye Mapisa Ngagula that suddenly has come back to fore, and now she must step aside. You know, Cyril Ramaphosa has taken into his office stats essay. So who is telling us what and where South Africa looks like, where they are underperforming or not performing or performing? Cyril Ramaphosa sits with all of that information, and it is only shared as and when at the pleasure of the president. Cyril Ramaphosa is a problem. And guys, I'm just saying, watch this man and watch this man very carefully. I've been saying this for 5 years and no one listens to me. You voted him back in.
Yeah, and he thrives under these conditions. So yeah, I guess, Lyndon Johnson once said that it's better to have your enemies inside the tent pissing out than outside the tent pissing in. And I think Ramaphosa probably agrees with Lyndon Johnson. But therein lies the problem again is you have this social compacting approach and all the various stakeholders who have their say around the table, but somebody's dictating the policy agenda, right? And we saw how that policy agenda manifested itself during the last 5 years. I mean, arguably, Ramaphosa was the most effective NDR president that the ANC has had, right? Expropriation without compensation, National Health Insurance Act. We saw the Hate Speech Act coming through as well at the last minute. and really a raft of interventionist, highly statist policies that are constricting economic growth and freedom in this country, right? So we need to completely overhaul the policy framework in South Africa. And I'm just not convinced that the man who's presided over the last 5 years, the person to do that, of course, the balance of power has changed. But I don't think all of the ANC caucus have suddenly kind of woken up as kind of free market liberals the day after the election or the day after the GNU was signed. So, that's the reason for my cautious pessimism. But yeah, you know, I think something I've observed in South Africa is that we kind of get caught between this binary of excessive optimism or excessive pessimism, right? The country's either going to hell in a handbasket or...
Yeah, we're like a person...
It's the South African way, baby. It's the South African way.
But, you know, Peter Thiel says that you should avoid excessive optimism or excessive pessimism because they both converge on inaction and passivity, right? Because if you're excessively pessimistic, then you just slip into nihilism and, like, the world is stuffed, so what am I supposed to do about it? Excessive optimism means that you maybe have your head in the sand and you overlook problems that are staring you in the face, right? So I think being a bit skeptical, kind of understanding the landscape of power in South Africa, I think is still very important. But what I am encouraged by is what the political scientist R.W. Johnson terms the secularization of South African politics. Like, as Gareth says, you know, we live in this very plural, diverse country with different divergent interests, and now we're starting to see our politics coalesce around these different interests. And that's creating a lot of disruption, a lot of upheaval, and the kind of maybe the old dynamic has shifted and changed, right? You no longer have this ANC that is this broad church and all of the political contestation happens within it. A lot of those conflicts have now been externalized. You see the RET faction now contesting within the national political domain under MK, or the radical socialist wing and the ex-Youth League now being the EFF, right? So I think that competition is healthy, and it also means that potentially we could be having a much more meaningful debate around policy and that kind of transactional aspect that will be introduced to Parliament. I mean, Parliament has really been a defunct institution for decades now. I mean, all of the best and brightest minds have exited there, but now we see a lot of new faces, a lot of new political parties, and I think that that's good.
Mm. Pragmatism. If there's anything that we can all agree on, it's that practically we just need a government to get things done, or else they must get out of the way. So either way, I'm happy. Again, I'm going to say that whichever way this goes, let's say that they're caught in deadlock and nothing can be done for the next 5 years. Whoopee, I'm okay with that.
Right.
Yeah. rather have a government that can't do anything stupid, even if they can't do anything good either, but rather have a government that's paralyzed and can't make agreements and can't come to any consensus or resolution on anything, then have a dangerous, destructive one, which is what we have had for 30 years. And then the alternative, which is where the sunlit uplands, and I don't want to be overly optimistic here either, but I'm sick of seeing media personalities, people who brand themselves analysts, who are already predicting this thing falling apart tomorrow. And so far, they've been wrong on every other thing before. You know, if you have a track record in the South African media of getting it wrong, every single time you've ever made a prediction, we should stop listening to you at some point. And there are lots of people in the media who are still being listened to or are still being given platforms despite the fact that they keep getting it wrong. So the upside, again, to go back to the business analogy, and Warren Buffett always says, until you can manage your emotions, don't expect to manage money. And until you can manage your emotions, don't expect to manage a country. And we've had too many emotional children in charge of too many things, including in the opposition parties. And now we are not asking them how they feel about things. We're asking them to get things done. And that can be right?
I think that's very good. And I think one of the things that I look forward to seeing is the opposition getting a chance to grow their own depth. Gareth, you were saying that MK is like paper thin because it's there's one person.
Say that all again. We didn't hear you. You froze a little bit.
Hey, was paper thin because of Jacob Zuma, right?
Yes. And the DA is obviously not paper thin in the same way. There's a lot of talent in that party and a lot of hardworking, dedicated, proud South Africans. But I don't think that the depth is there for that party to run a hell of a lot more than it's likely to be given at this juncture. So what will be nice, though, is as it grows in responsibility, it will have an opportunity to see who is good at the job. It'll have more positions to wield and kind of, you know, groom new talent. And that is a very important part of our maturing democracy is that, you know, multiple parties need to be in a position where they've got a stable of talent that they can draw on to actually get things done in a practical fashion, to appoint directors general, CEOs of SOEs, ministers and advisory aides, analysts and so on. Like there is a lot to do. And I don't think that they're ready to do everything. But having this time to be able to do something is a step in the right direction for them, I think, for sure.
Okay.
Look, and I like the injection of new individuals. You know, it's nice to see new talent coming into Parliament. It'll be interesting to see what Songhe Zozibi does. It'll be interesting to see what the IFP does with their three extra seats. It'll be fascinating to see what the PA does in that National Assembly with their six seats and the people that they are putting in there. Whatever happens between the chaos that I foresee in the next 5 years, between that chaos, what we're also definitely going to see is I think we're going to see a little bit of a sedimenting and normalizing of some of the emotions that have been that we've seen over the past 5 years. I think we're going to see a much more muted EFF in that National Assembly, which will also, you know, have an interesting effect. Whatever happens in the next 5 years, there's going to be lots of chaos, but I do think we have to watch Cyril Ramaphosa very carefully because I don't trust the man.
I mean, all of us here are obsessed with politics at the national level, right? But I think you also have to remember that no politician is coming to save you. And I'm sure there are a lot of patriotic politicians who really do want the best for the country, but there are also some others that just want the best for themselves.
Right? Chaos!
And, you know, as ordinary South Africans, how do you respond to this new situation? And I think my advice remains the same, which is state-proof yourself. Don't expect that someone's going to come fix the problems for you. You've got to work with your community, your neighborhood, in your business, with other people through civil society structures to solve some of the problems at scale.
Well, I agree with absolutely everything you've just said, David. I would like to, here's my slogan for the next 5 years, because Pumi says, you know, it's going to be chaotic. But what I'd like to see is make South African politics boring again. I want to see boring, bureaucratic processes. I want to see people solving things with technology. I want to see problems just go away. I don't want to know who's doing them. I don't want to know the personalities of the people involved. We've had plenty of action and excitement over the last couple of years, and I think people are just over it. What we want is to have absolutely less to do with our government on a daily basis. I'd like to see a devolution of powers, and this is one of the reasons I like the IFP, and I'm glad that they're part of this government of national unity, is they truly believe that power should be taken down to the provinces and from there into the municipalities and the local regions. And I'd like to see people making their own rules at that level, because those are the places where people are actually in touch with politics, where the lights on their street are on or off, where the roads have potholes or do not, where the people know who to call when things go wrong in their neighborhood. I want that to be the norm. I don't care who's sitting in the union buildings or which international delegation is being feted at some banquet. It's completely unimportant to most of them.
But you know what? Amen. What the MK, what MK's win has also done, I think the effect of MK's win in our politics, I think, is actually very positive, because I think it has given many, many other people the talent that we're looking for. It has given them the hope that says, oh, you know, I could stand and I could make a difference. I could come up, and if I do the work, if I do the groundwork, I could absolutely be one of the people that go. And I hope what it will also give is it'll give much more of the young, bright South Africans that are energetic, that believe in this country and want to see this country work. I hope it gives them the courage to want to participate in politics beyond just showing up at the ballot box.
Yeah, and South Africa has a federal constitutional structure, right? And we should embrace that. I think our political culture is not very federal. The way that the country is run is sort of like a unitary state where all the decisions that matter are in Pretoria. But Gareth's point about devolution of power, I mean, devolution is something that's granted from the center. But what we actually have and what we should be cultivating is more federalism, right? Bottom-up expressions of power and respecting the constitutional authority of the provincial governments, the local governments. And I think there is a massive opportunity for the DA, if it is serious about extracting concessions from this GNU, is around saying, okay, well, in the Western Cape, we need to be in control of policing in, you know, if you consider these violent crime areas and Cape Flats, Mitchell's Plain, etc., you know, rail networks, the ports, energy provision, right? And that would really help to bolster its power base in the Western Cape. And the same could be the case for the IFP, right? And KZN, there's also a lot of other political impulses there around sort of ethnic nationalism. And there needs to be a sort of a pressure release valve for that, those kind of sentiments, right? So I think there's massive opportunity there. And one of the difficulties for the DA in this, and I guess for the IFP as well, is in the past, they've been able to say, okay, well, look, all this violent crime in the Cape Flats, you know, that's very sad, but that's not our responsibility. That's Pretoria's fault. But now you can't do that anymore. Now you can't just point to Pretoria and say, well, that's not our problem. It is your problem. And, you know, arguably it's been their problem all along, because they need to serve the interests of their constituency. If your 8-year-old daughter is shot by a stray bullet during gang violence on the flats, then you don't really care about the division of powers and the constitutional limits and whatever. You just care that your daughter was killed, right? So I think there's a massive opportunity there for the DA to say the condition of our participation in this GNU is big concessions on federalism. Like, we need to control things at the provincial level. And then I think you would start to see really power being exercised in a very meaningful way in South Africa. And that could really alter the course of the country.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I think something like this is right. But I mean, don't you also think, sometimes when I hear the devolution talk, I do recall living in the United States of America. And David and I have talked about this before. And in countries with federally devolved powers, usually what happens is your taxes are then extracted at a municipal level. So you pay your municipal taxes, and your taxes are extracted at a provincial level or a state level and at a national level. And in South Africa, I don't know how many people really want to pay Western Cape tax on top of paying the City of Cape Town tax and rates and the national tax. And part of the reason I bring this up is that I do think that South Africa is growing. It's going forward. This is a great moment. One, I also think it's important to look at the huge missing gaps. Perhaps the strangest thing about the 2024 election, to my eye, is the fact that no party campaigned on the argument that taxes in South Africa should be significantly cut. And part of the reason that's weird is that any democracy that works that you can think of tends to have at least one party arguing for the state to grow and one party arguing for the state to lean itself out. In South Africa, according to the World Bank statistics, we have the government that has grown the fastest relative to how service delivery has decreased as a quotient of all sovereign democracies in the world. The only country that's done worse than South Africa on that measure, sort of getting more bloated, but getting worse at actually delivering bang for buck on tax intake, is Lesotho. Other than that, it's like we are just the worst in the world. So it's an obvious place where there should be someone out there arguing, you know, we want to cut taxes. If you look at Afrobarometer, I think it was polling, if you poll ordinary South Africans, would you like to pay like less petrol tax, less tax on your income, less business tax? There's a huge, huge appetite for that. And not one party. I mean, the DA had like some little thing on like bonus chicken, VAT concessions. That was it. Freedom Front Plus wanted to increase taxes. ANC wants to increase taxes. EFF wants to increase taxes. It's like every single party, its political manifesto, I read all of them. They all actually want to seriously increase taxes. Sometimes devolution sounds like just another way to increase taxes too. And I think that there is something immature about South Africa's democracy that's brought out by the fact that there isn't anyone really saying, let's practically limit the size of government, get it out of the way, let business grow in the same old-fashioned way that's worked across the planet.
I gotta go and get people working. Yeah, I got to go and get my business growing, so I'm going to have to call this to an end. thank you very much for a very fun start to my Thursday morning. It's always lovely to see David. It's always lovely to see Gabriel and Pumi, as usual. I'm so glad that Pumi's back because we missed you that 1 week where you were away and not feeling well. She's back in action. And for anybody who was worried that she wasn't coming back, look, voila.
Back like Umkolo.
Right. Yeah, so let's I see someone calling Cyril Ramaphosa in the comments there, which I love. So let's keep an eye on him as Pumi said. Let's hope politics gets nice and boring and let's get South Africa working. That's really all. I don't even give a shit who's in charge anymore.
Let's get people working. 40% unemployment is unacceptable.
Cool. All right, everybody. See you later.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.